The other day I looked in the telephone directory for a name, Thomas Haskins. There were too many names like that. I closed the directory. I had the time measured to attend the opening of the Congress. Those first days it was impossible for me to visit Haskins. That Saturday in the evening I had time. I asked the porter in the hotel which road I should take to get to what seemed to me to be a suburb of the city. The porter arched his eyebrows and told me not to adventure in that place, and if I did, I should return before dark. I boarded a taxi and set out. Thomas Haskins himself opened the door when I rang the bell. After a brief preamble, he invited me to enter. His apartment was very modest. We talked a good deal. We had many things to discuss. For the first time I described to someone else my experiences in full confidence that that person would understand. "Did you have this experience very long ago?" I asked. "More or less 10 years ago," he answered. "And what did you think at that time?" I asked. "That all was unreal. It seemed as if suddenly my own psyche had me in a trap. Now I have become accustomed to it." "But did you believe from the first all that they told you?" "Yes. I believed that something very exceptional had occurred in my life." "Tom, was it a man or a woman?"
"Man."
"His name?"
"Hamill."
"Did he tell you where he came from?"
"He told me his planet was Amestria 9. That was what it sounded like, more or less."
"9. This is a remarkable confirmation that Tom's extraterrestrial contacts were with the same group of ETs as Hernandez. Have you ever thought of transmitting to anyone all of that experience?" "This," he said, indicating the color of his skin, "at times is an impediment. The sepia color of his skin would not be any impediment to live, or to breathe, or to sleep." "Point." Nevertheless, I said nothing. "Tell me, Tom, did they invite you to travel in their ship?" "Does this have some importance to you?" he said. He looked at me at length. He drew in the smoke from his cigar and, exhaling with each word, said, "Yes, I have traveled in their ship, but that I save, as though it were a dream. They took me out to observe the world, and I could see through a sensor the passage of the comet Halley."
"Did Hamill tell you anything about that?"
"About what?"
"About the comet."
"Oh yes," he said. He closed his eyes a moment, as if evoking some passage from his life, and continued, "When I was little my mother prohibited us going out, whenever there was an eclipse or when it was said that a comet was passing." "Did you mention this to Hamill?"
"Yes. And he told me that our ancestors thought that comets were a powerful source of energy. They thought their passage through the universe was damaging to all they encountered, like they were gigantic aspirators that absorbed many of the gases they confronted distributed throughout the universe. These gases frequently are highly dangerous to the life in space, and many of them feed themselves on energy." He said that a comet absorbing energy, and by the force of friction as well as the enormous concentration of particles, becomes saturated and some of the gases trail away to form the tail, and in this manner scatters the flow, so to speak, of these gases already highly contaminated with others. Such, upon being scattered in space, are attracted by planets that are relatively near their path. Here they encounter the gravitational force of the bodies. The velocity with which these particles travel makes them arrive more rapidly than the others which swarm in space. Those others which orbit in the universe will be thousands of years later in arriving, while the particles of the comet are sent at extraordinary velocity. Like they were launched from a catapult?"
"Oh no," Tom said. "Such a comparison would be a coarse joke. We can call it friction,
for its accumulated de-energizing effect, and that would be a more adequate term according to what Hamel said. Does this present any danger for our planet? Oh, of course it does, replied Tom. The atmosphere of your planet attracts all these disseminated particles and later they condense into clouds. The rains carry that to the ground and then it is absorbed into the lakes, streams, and seas, and primarily in the harvest crops. The air also takes part in the distribution of these particles. In time, that contaminated air comes into contact with some 30% of the inhabitants of our planet. Isn't that pretty dangerous for our humanity? Yes, that is what Hamel told me. He also told me that space is saturated with dangers and that we still do not know the extent of that harm. He told me that, if the scientists of Earth would unite to bring exact knowledge together to expel all of this kind of particles toward the outside, perhaps within 20 years we would be in a position to do it and thus avoid greater contamination of the planet. What else did he tell you? He told me that my planet was beautiful. Point. A planet full of life, he said, and that it throbs in the field of the universe, as a chosen planet, nevertheless having deteriorated to a level such that it no longer offers security for life. Nor for a long time has it offered such despite the advances of its sciences. There was silence. I continued reflecting on the position of Haskins. He was a man of color, unemployed, and living immersed in all kinds of racial, social and economical problems. The violence was clearly advertised on the street where he lived. Groups were stationed on the corners staring with offensive curiosity at whatever passer seemed to them unknown. It was obvious that Tom had been selected from hostile surroundings, as one would pluck a rose from among poison ivy. He convinced me, by his words, that he took this experience as something rare in his life, but not transcendental. Have you done anything to publicize those experiences you lived with Hamel? I asked, breaking the silence. Yes, but for me it was difficult. Not even a printed article? No, but look, he said, taking out a small booklet of 50 pages, this booklet I was ordered to make. There was only one printing of 2,000 copies. He had dedicated all of his savings to the edition. I knew that it had taken a great effort to do this. Thomas Haskins was brilliant, intelligent, noble, and above all at peace of mind with himself. He seemed an exceptional man, drawn from an unhealthy environment, but what impressed me greatly was his resignation before the means in which he had to live. He believed that his friendship with extraterrestrial beings was not going to improve his actual situation. I understood completely what he had wanted to tell me, but the revelations that pertained to us, as terrestrials charged with looking for an improvement in the world level, must be directed toward something more profound. At least that is how it seemed to me. Reclining on the bed in my hotel, looking toward the ceiling, I discovered what I did not see before. It occurred to me that before me was opening a tiny breach in the wall of confusion. There would be obstacles. If Thomas Haskins had had the courage to publish a book by himself, I also must do so. My conditions were different from those of his, because I would have to consider that I would be delivering, through the authoring of my memories, my prestige as a tenured professor as well. He was unemployed and his name was not well known. I held a position of high responsibility at the university, and it was by means of this position that the rector had selected me, as the representative of my country. All that I was planning would change what I would have to do. Was it worth the pain? At that moment I wanted to declare myself the winner without fighting. It cleared up in an instant, and in that same microsecond of time also, it occurred to me that material values counted for nothing before the truth. To me had been brought the proposition of bringing to light my conversations with Laya, but would it not be sufficient to sign the inscriptions with the word peace for all who would understand what I proposed? No, I felt, that is not the way. The thorns that would come to me, when the skepticism emerged, must be accepted. I myself had been an intransigent skeptic. I could imagine the mockery, the doubt, and the sympathetic chuckles. I could see myself then in a swamp and slowly sinking. I returned to an exciting day in the Congress, still having the volume by Haskins in my hands, but I had already arrived at a solution. I would try Laya's proof, and, though my prestige was at risk, I would speak to whoever would listen to me about Laya and her presence in our world. Point. And her advice of an insecure tomorrow, the solution of which could only be found among ourselves,